Oh my goodness. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I am back. I missed you last week and I'm bummed that I didn't get to record. But hey, we're back this week once again. You know, life is tough when I have so many hobbies and passions that I can't do. I am like glad though that I'm busy doing stuff that I like, you know, like it's not like I'm busy feeling burnt out. I'm busy and I'm feeling like really energized because I'm busy doing, you know, making a lot of prints. I've been printing so many shirts, keeping up with my business. It feels so, hey, anyone else like absolutely cringe every time? I don't know if this is just me, but if anyone else out there is like an artist or someone who like runs a business like me, like myself, do you hate telling people that you're like a small bit? Oh, I'm a small business owner. I don't know why that just like comes across as like very annoying for some reason when I say it. Like I hate, like I always lead with like, I'm an artist. And then I have to, and then begrudgingly, I'm like, I own a small business. Like, I don't know why I hate it. I think it's because it's like very much, I think I'm traumatized from like not Tumblr. What the hell? What universe am I in today? I think it's because I'm traumatized from like small business TikTok and Instagram, like not to stir the pot like that much, but like those people are annoying. People who are like always like talking about their small business and like, okay, it's not all small business owners, obviously. Okay, take this with a grain of salt because I kind of feel like I'm getting out of hand here already and we're a whole less than 2 minutes into the episode, but hear me out. For a while on TikTok, it was like so cringy because people would be making like all of this resin crap. Do you guys remember when people would make like resin pyramids and like resin trays and everyone was like, oh my God, I have a small business and no one's buying from me. And it would be like this whole, what I hate is like the small business owners. You didn't see me do that, but I did air quotes around owners because you don't own a small business if you're making plastic garbage that nobody wants. You know what I mean? Like it's not everyone else's. Okay, here's what I'm getting at. And I'm trying to tread carefully because I don't want to just come across as like a bully, okay? Good for you if you own a small business. I literally do. You know what I mean? Like I pay business taxes in the state of California. I hate it when people get on social media making stuff that like no one really asked for. It's the resin stuff that's really coming to mind. Like 2020, 2021 era, like resin pyramids, resin trays with like plastic garbage in them. People would make this stuff and then be like guilt tripping their audience on social media for not purchasing from them. And it's like as a business owner and an entrepreneur, because I would say I'm like, I'm more okay describing myself as an entrepreneur than I am as a small business owner. And I don't know why that is, but to me, there is some kind of like element of innovation with the title entrepreneur. And like, okay, now this is a different thing. This is like totally off topic. I don't even know why I'm talking about this, but I'm an artist and I would also consider myself an entrepreneur because entrepreneur, there is some level of like, going where the money is, if that makes sense. And like, I know that is like very, that doesn't really line up well with my like general distaste for capitalism and stuff, but like I do, like I'm always like iterating stuff based on how I can make money off of it. Like, and I guess, and that is an entrepreneurial spirit, okay? I don't know, ever since I was a little kid, okay? I've been starting businesses. I've been making lip balm and crafts and I've been selling stuff like since I was a little kid. And so like, it makes sense that I do this now as an adult because like, I'm kind of just doing the same thing I did as a little kid, but now with adult resources. So that kind of slays. But what was I even talking about? I'm an artist, I'm an entrepreneur. Oh, I find it very frustrating when people on social media, specifically TikTok, are making stuff that is overpriced, is not good. Like it doesn't even really require, like resin is just plastic that's never going to degrade. Like that's just going to be in landfills forever. And people were just like making all this junk and then kind of guilt tripping their audience about like not buying it or like I'm a small business owner and I can't pay my bills and whatever. And it's like, well, that's not the audience's problem. Like that's not your your customer's problem. Like, that's your problem. You need to make better stuff that people actually want to buy. You know what I mean? I find that happens a lot, like, on my Reels algorithm, because I post, like, my art small business stuff on Instagram. So that's the content that I get served as well. And it really frustrates me when I see artists on there who are just constantly bitching about the algorithm and how and I know the algorithm sucks, you guys. Like, I know it. I know it sucks. Like, I know how thankless it is to post stuff on social media and not have any return and not see any people, like, not see that converted into sales, not even getting views. Like, it's so frustrating. It really is, because we are kind of just beholden to this, the whims of the algorithm, you know? But I hate it when people get on there and bitch and moan about it, okay? I'd rather burn my whole life down than listen to one more second of that bitching and moaning, because that's not gonna make people wanna support you. Guilting people is never, making people feel guilt is never going to have the effect you want. You know what I mean? Did any of that just make sense? I've just been like blathering on now for like 5 minutes, but I just find generally that it does frustrate me when people are on social media, running a business, selling their art, whatever, and it's like they're not trying to sell their stuff to you. They're trying to make you feel bad for not buying it. And it's like, okay, if no one's buying your stuff, like, I hate to say it, but like, you need to pivot. Like, you need to find something different. Like, that's, you can't just, if it isn't working. And here's why I think that I kind of almost fall, I sometimes identify even more with the entrepreneur title than the artist title, because like, I iterate my stuff so much until it is something that people want to buy. Like, I have started and abandoned so many things that weren't giving me the return that I wanted, because the end all be all, like, what I want to do is to be able to live my life and make a living and support myself based off of the stuff that I make. If I just make stuff that nobody wants to buy, I'm not going to be able to do that. You know what I mean? And I feel like a true artist, like, if we're like really boiling that down to like the essence of the term artist, an artist would make whatever they wanted to make all the time, and they wouldn't care if it sold or not. The reason that I think maybe I fall more into the entrepreneurial side of things is because I make what I want to make, yes, but when something's working, I lean into that. If people are buying something, I kind of put all of my energy into that and I make that. And then when that stops working, when that kind of dies down or whatever, I pivot and I try something different. And I'm always like, I'm always working on so many different things. Now I'm kind of feeling self-conscious because I feel like this is coming across as like, I'm better than those people. But it's like not, it's not that way. It's just that if I make something and it's not selling, I really could never imagine getting on social media and like griping about it and like guilting people about it, about how I can't pay my bills. It's like, okay, well, that's kind of like my problem then. Like, why, if as someone who is selling this stuff, like, I need to cater to the people who are buying it from me, you know what I mean? I don't know. I know that is kind of at odds with how I talk about, like, you know, anti-capitalism and whatever on here, and how I think that nobody should ever have to work, because that is a core part of my identity, is that I think working sucks and that nobody should have to work, and that we live in a society with the technological advancements available where we could wipe out most jobs and pay people to do nothing or do what they want to do. You know what I mean? But end of the day, I live in a capitalist society where I have to make money, and therefore I make do. Country girls make do. You know what I mean? Anyway, end of story. Jesus Christ, what was I even going to start talking about? Okay, first thing up on the agenda today is that I actually need to admit that I was wrong, and not something that I'm finding much joy in doing, but I do need to say that a couple weeks ago when I was talking about the TTPTSD and everything, I said there is not going to be, I was like, I don't believe that there's going to be a set for this in the Eras Tour. It just doesn't really make sense. And I said, I will eat my words if that ends up happening. Here I am eating my words. She did put a TTPD set in the Eras Tour, because she opened the European leg of the tour this week. And yeah, so I just need to say, hey guys, sorry, I was wrong. I was overconfident in saying that those weren't going to be stadium songs, but whatever, she's making it work. Can I say something real quick though? And I know this, it doesn't bring me, hey, you guys, it doesn't bring me any joy to have to say that Taylor Swift didn't slay. You know what I mean? But the Tortured Poets outfit for the set is not giving. Okay. Every time I see it, I want to like it. I really do. It's not, I can't. I don't like it. I don't like that the mullet dress, like the high-low dress with the cursive writing on it. Like it's giving very much, it's reminding me of like when I was 12 and I painted my room blue and I put this New York City decal on the wall and had like cursive writing everywhere. Like it's giving very much like 2014, like Marshall's vibes. And that's all I have to say. And it's just, I'm just sorry. And I don't like the boots that she wears with it. Those fuck-ass little white boots. Like witch boots. I just don't like it. Like for some reason, it's very at odds with the overall like vibe of the album. Because here's what I'll say, you guys, I've been fucking with Tortured Poets. Not the whole thing, okay? I made my own playlist of all of the songs that I actually do go back and listen to and enjoy listening to, but I put it in a separate playlist because there's a lot of skips on TTPD for me, okay? But so far, here's the songs that I've been loving, okay? So Long London, love that song. I Can Do It With a Broken Heart, I find that song to be catchy. I Can Fix Him, No Really I Can, one of my favorites. I'm Gonna Get You Back, Fresh Out the Slammer, Chloe or Sam or Sophia or Marcus, I Look in People's Windows, How Did It End, and Florida. Those are the songs that I've been going back to. I am fucking with those songs pretty heavily now. I think that I Look in People's Windows is my favorite song on the whole album. It kind of threw me off at first because I think I was trying too hard. When I listened to the Tortured Poets Department the first time, I was like trying too hard to like understand it and I wasn't like feeling the music. And so the part in I Look in People's Windows when she says deranged weirdo, I think that really took me out of it the first time because I was reading along with the lyrics and I was like, oh, I don't know if I like that. But like one day, a couple weeks ago, it was like a nice sunny day. I was a little bit high. I was laying at the park in the sun and I listened to that song and I was like, whoa, this is like a really good song. So I will say that that is probably my favorite song on the whole album as of right now. And that is all I'm going to say because I know that maybe a couple weeks ago I was like, I'm going to make a whole like bonus episode talking about my like newly developed thoughts on the Tortured Poets Department. And I still might do that. I just haven't been in the headspace to do that. But I know that like a lot of people, not a lot of people, because a lot of people don't even listen to this podcast, but I know that a few people who listen to this podcast do not fuck with Taylor Swift the way I do. So I'm going to stop. I'm going to cut it off right there. Okay. And everything else will be put in a different episode that you do not have to listen to. Okay. Sorry. Sorry for making you guys all of you haters suffer while I talked about Taylor Swift for 5 minutes. Okay. God forbid women have hobbies. I need to talk about Challengers. I saw it on Thursday night and I haven't actually stopped thinking about it. I kind of think about it all the time every day. And I come up with a reason to talk about it all the time with people. I need to go see it again. Me and Ty need to go because I saw it with Brooke in Montana, but I was like, Ty, you need to see this movie. Like, it will change your life. Holy shit, you guys. I loved Challengers. And when I saw the preview, trailer, whatever it is, I think it was when some of us had gone to see Anyone But You earlier this year, and we saw the trailer for Challengers. And I remember me and Montana looked at each other, jaws on the floor. We said, we have to go see this. Our asses will be set. We will be tuned in. Our phones will be silenced and our tummies will be full of popcorn and we are listening. Okay. We are here. We are ready. We are watching Challengers. And that is exactly what we did on Thursday afternoon. And it was incredible because we went to a matinee at this tiny theater on Coronado, which like apparently no one in Coronado wanted to see Challengers. We were the only three bitches in the theater. And so we were like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like we can chat, like we can do commentary. Like we don't have to worry about disturbing anybody. Guess what? We were silent. We were tuned the fuck in. We did not even take advantage of the fact that we had the theater all to ourselves and we could have been as loud and rambunctious as we wanted to be because we were so gripped by this movie. It was amazing. The soundtrack, we were gagged by. Like, we loved the club beats. Like, with the tennis, like something about those two things worked really well together. I fucked super heavy with the soundtrack. Like it made the movie incredible. Spoilers, if you haven't seen Challengers and you want to, I would maybe suggest skipping ahead. I don't know. I'm just going to kind of like talk freely about this. So if you don't want it spoiled, don't listen. Skip ahead a little bit. But what I really liked about this movie was that we had the three main characters. We had Tashi, we had Patrick, and we had Arthur, Art, which was cracking me up because my grandpa's name is Arthur and I've never known anyone else like be named Arthur, and my grandma always calls him Art. Like, and I didn't know that there were people that were under the age of 75 named Arthur. So slay, you know what I mean? But it just kind of threw me off because every time they referred to him as Art in the movie, I was like, that's my grandpa, you know? That's Papa to you. But so we had the three of them, and I love that those characters kind of existed in a vacuum. Like, we didn't get any knowledge about their family, really. I know that Tashi's mom was part of the movie, but we didn't know anything about her backstory, any of those three main characters' backstories. We don't really know where they came from, their family, their history, anything about that, but they are such full and rich characters that you know so much about in the movie. But I found it really interesting that there wasn't really any, they didn't have any context. Like, we didn't have any context for these characters other than the vacuum that they existed in the movie, which was really interesting. And the other thing that I loved was that we got the beginning part when they were in college, you know, when they met at the US Open or whatever. I don't even know where they met, some tennis place. But when Arthur and Patrick met Tashi. And then we kind of get the whole storyline about how Tashi and Patrick dated and had a thing. And then eventually she and Art got together and got married and had a kid and everything. But we don't see any of that. We got the part when they were, you know, like 18, 20, whatever, when they were young in college. And then we get the present day storyline where, you know, Art is getting back into tennis after his injury and Tashi has all this resentment because she never recovered from her injury like he did. And we get that, but we don't get any of the middle part where her and Art kind of built their relationship and fell in love and got married and everything. And what me and Brooke and Montana clocked right away walking out of the theater was that I like that because it shows how inconsequential these relationships were to Tashi. Like, she didn't love either of those men. She loved tennis. All she wanted to do was play tennis. And the reason that she was with Art was because he played tennis. And so that's why she was so adamant about him going back into tennis. And she was saying, I'll leave you if you don't win tomorrow. Like, if you retire, I'm not going to be with you anymore, because she didn't love him. Like, she loved tennis and she loved tennis through him. That was her, he was the vessel through which she could experience tennis in a way that she couldn't after her injury. And it was really interesting because these men to her, like, weren't really anything. They were a means to an end, and the end was tennis. I don't know, like, I just loved it. I thought it was brilliantly done. I was talking to my boss yesterday, one of the doctors, and I was like, yeah, like, my friends and I went to go see Challengers last night. And she was like, oh, really? Like, was it good? And I was like, yeah, it was phenomenal. And she was like, that's really interesting. She was like, I saw the trailer and I thought it looked really bad. She was like, who even would want to go see this? And I was like, no, girl, like, trust me, this movie slays. Yeah, I loved it. Do I have anything else to say about it? The other thing that Brooke pointed out was that Tashi never said she loved either one of them. Like, she made a point of saying, that one time her and Art were getting lunch, she was like, what makes you think I'm in love with him? I never said I was in love with him, referring to Patrick. And then at the very beginning of the movie, Art says, you know, I love you, right? And she goes, I know you do. But we never hear her, both of those men were in love with her, but she never expressed that back to them. Like, Tashi's sexuality was like tennis sexual. Like, she literally just wanted to play tennis and use, because she never even wanted to have sex with them. Like, it was a really fascinating, I want to watch it again because I feel like there was a lot there, and like, that's a really complex character. Like, I like the way that these men were like pawns to her, you know? Like, I find that to be an interesting, especially like threesome, quote unquote, scene. It's like not even, you know what I mean? Like, because they never have sex in the movie. Like, well, no, she has sex with Patrick the night before the Challenger at the end, but that was so that she used that as a bargaining tool to make Patrick lose so that Art would win and continue his tennis career. And I like how there was a lot of unspoken feelings between Arthur and Patrick. Like, it was clear that there was a lot of love in that relationship. Like, they'd been friends forever. They played tennis together. Like, there was a lot going on there that was, like, not explicitly homoerotic in nature, but I liked that there was a lot of open-endedness to it. Like, at the end, the very ending scene, where the two of them, like, collide mid-air on the tennis court, like, that just leaves so much open, and I think I like that so much better than if they had given us the ending tied up in a little bow. I hope that the ending of the movie, after what we are shown, is that Art leaves Tashi, him and Patrick reconnect and continue this like really special friendship that they had. And I don't know, like, that's just, it was just a great movie. Okay, you know, maybe, here's the thing. I was going to record this podcast yesterday when the movie was more fresh in my mind because I saw it Thursday, but now it's Saturday and it's kind of like, Thursday was a long time ago at this point. I feel like I had like more fleshed out thoughts, but I'm kind of just recalling all of this from memory and I feel like I don't have anything else to say. But I'm going to go see this movie again, obviously, in theaters. It was a theater watch for me, you know, like, yes, it would still slay at home, but on the big screen, chef's kiss. And if I have more fleshed out thoughts, better thoughts, different thoughts, I will be adding them on in a different podcast episode. So stay tuned. I just had to talk about Challengers because I was so excited for it and it did not fucking disappoint. What's his name? Fucking Mike Faced or whatever. Is that his name? And then Joshua O'Connor? Oh my gosh, he's British. I didn't know that. That kind of makes sense. He kind of looks British, but he really... Oh, he was in Peaky Blinders. God, I don't know shit. I don't know dick about shit. Peaky Blinders. Romeo and Juliet. Which Romeo and Juliet? A TV movie, 2021. That's random. Do you guys remember the Romeo and Juliet with Hailee Steinfeld? Yeah, 2013. I remember seeing this. I went to see this with my friend Savannah when I was 15 years old. Who's the guy? I remember he was Douglas Booth. Douglas Booth. He had a moment in that like kind of mid-2010s. What else was he in? Nothing. Wait, maybe I'm... Am I crazy? I thought that Douglas Booth kind of was in more stuff, but I'm looking at his catalog right now and I'm not really seeing anything. So maybe I'm crazy. His wife or partner, Wikipedia has it listed as partner, is in Masters of the Air, which is that show that had... Okay, this show confuses me because it had... This show came out January 26, 2024, January of this year. We have Austin Butler and Barry Keoghan in this show, both coming off the tails of huge movies. Like, Austin Butler, what was he in? Elvis, and what else was he just... He was in Dune. Like, he's in all this shit. Barry Keoghan had a massive moment from Saltburn. Like, they were in this Masters of the Air show. How come I haven't heard jack shit about this show? It might just be me. Like, it might be... This might be... Because I'm not into... Famously, not into war stuff. It tends to, like, sick me out in a way that most stuff doesn't. Like, gore and horror and stuff like that, like, doesn't really bother me, but like war stuff like sicks me out. What was the one? Okay, so the worst movie maybe I've ever seen in my whole life from a purely viewing experience perspective, because I can't even really remember the point of the story or any details other than that I was sick to my stomach watching this movie, is the one with Andrew Garfield, and he is I think they called it a conscientious objector, I think. What is this movie called? Hacksaw Ridge, you guys. I watched this movie like close to 10 years ago. When did it come out? 2016. So I probably watched this movie in 2016. I watched it with my ex-boyfriend, who I was dating at the time, and his whole family. We were all in their living room watching this movie, and it was kind of new. Like, we hadn't been together for that long, and everyone wanted to watch this movie. So I was like, okay, well, I can't be the only person who like doesn't want to watch this movie. Maybe I'll like it, you know? I was 18. I was like trying things. I was like, maybe I like this movie. Who's to say? I was open, you know, open to new experiences. I should not have been. This movie ruined the rest of my day and a lot of days after it. Like, I was sitting there. I remember it just like it was yesterday. I remember sitting on the couch in their living room and everyone was watching this movie and I was like probably green in the face, to be honest with you. Like, so many limbs blown off, like so much just, I think that's what really gets me about war movies. Other than that, like, I just kind of disagree with the concept of war fundamentally, you know? Kind of a hot take, I know. My neighbors are having a birthday party for someone's dog in the courtyard right now, and it is so loud. They are like absolutely raging down there, and good for them. I think that dogs should be able to have birthday parties. Like, good for him for having a rich social life. However, I'm not stopping my recording for that. So if you can hear yammering in the background, I've done my best. I've closed all the windows. Try as I might, this apartment is not soundproof. So you might be hearing some chitter chatter in the background. Just know that it is a Black Lab's birthday. I hope that makes up for it. Wait, can I actually talk about another movie that I watched recently? That ended up being a war movie. Okay, so we were looking for a movie to watch and we saw this movie that we had never heard of before called Cherry, starring Tom Holland. We were like, we like Tom Holland, let's watch the trailer. The trailer, from what I remember, we kind of thought we were getting into like a Baby Driver situation. Like, maybe we thought this was gonna be like a heist movie or like a bank robbing. That's what it was. There was like, we kind of thought the central theme of the story was robbing banks, and that's kind of something that I'm known to like. I like bank robbing, stealing movies. That's kind of my thing. So we were like, okay, we're kind of in for like a fun little viewing experience here. Let's rock and roll. We put on this movie, you guys. It is the most brutal 2 hours of your whole life. I gotta pull this up right now. From 2021, which is so funny. I'd never heard about this movie before. It has Tom Holland, Sierra Bravo. What? She was in something else recently. She's kind of cute. What was she in? Red Band Society, Big Time Rush. Okay, so a real queen. The only other thing that she's been in recently is this thing called Wayne, which I've never heard of. Big Time Rush, Big Time Rush the movie, Red Band Society. Yeah, anyway, I quite liked her in this movie. She should be in more stuff. But who else is, oh my God, you guys. Leo Woodall, he was from White Lotus. He was also in the movie Cherry. And I'm just now putting that together. This fucking movie is 2 hours and 21 minutes long. And it is a punishment to watch the entire time. And here's the thing. It was a good story. It was just so goddamn depressing. Like, spoilers for this movie, okay? It came out 3 years ago. But if you are like, I want to watch this, I don't want to know what happens, don't listen. Once again, skip ahead. This is not for you. But basically, the movie starts off with, and again, I'm pulling this out of my ass because I've only watched this once and it was a while ago at this point. But Tom Holland's character falls in love with this girl. They're kind of like college sweethearts. And then she tells him that she's moving away to go to a different school. And he's like so heartbroken over this that his solution for dealing with the heartbreak is that he enlists in the army. He becomes a medic for the army and he goes to Iraq. And we get this whole like story about him being in Iraq. It was brutal. I don't come from like a military family, right? Like, I don't, and I never even like really grew up with anyone. So like, I know in my heart that it's bad. You know what I mean? Like, I know that I don't like it, but I've never been like personally victimized by the military industrial complex. Watching this movie made me feel so sad for these little like 18, 19 year old boys who go see unspeakable horrors and then are plopped back into civilian life in the United States, should they be lucky enough to even make it out alive? Like, Tom Holland, who is just like, he acted the his fucking pussy off in this movie, as Tom Holland does. That's the only thing he knows how to do, is act his fucking pussy off. Good for him. Because the rest of the story is that, like, he goes to Iraq, he does his time there, like, his entire, what do they call it, like, is it like a platoon? Guys, I don't know shit, I'm actually so stupid, and it's all happening, you're getting to know that right now. I don't know if platoon is the right word, but it was, like, you know, his, like, group of people that he was stationed with in Iraq, like, all of them at one point died from an explosive device, and he was the only person who, like, wasn't on the vehicle at the time, so he survived, but, like, all of his friends, like, everyone died, like, it was so sad. And then he comes back to the United States. I think it's in Ohio. So he was in Ohio, he went to Iraq, he came back, and then it's just this terrible descent into drug addiction and PTSD, and he is, like, so unwell, and It is like a terrible story about how the military fucks people up. And in that sense, it's a good movie, right? Like, I appreciated the story it told. I appreciated the perspective it had, because it was a real, like, fuck the military. Like, it does this to people story. It was not, I think what usually pisses me off, on top of just the gore and, like, nastiness of, like, seeing, you know, people's legs blown off and whatever, the thing that bugs me about war movies is that there's usually some kind of, like, look how amazing and how strong these men are that fought for our country. Like, it's so propaganda adjacent, and that really doesn't sit good with me. I don't like that. What I do appreciate about Cherry is that it showed the horrors of what the military does to these young disenfranchised people who feel like they have no other choice. And when he comes back from Iraq, like, he goes to this psychiatrist because he's obviously having extreme PTSD, and the psychiatrist doesn't even ask any questions. He just kind of prescribes him medicine right away, and that kind of begins his spiral into being addicted to pharmaceuticals, and it was just a whole thing. And there was bank robbing involved, but that wasn't the main point of the story. That was kind of like, you know, that was like a sidebar, if anything, the bank robbing. I thought I was going in for a bank robbing movie. Not the case. It was not that. Anyway, me and Ty were watching this movie, and, like, it just kept getting worse. Like, like, every time we were like, okay, like, that has to have been the climax. Like, that had to have been the worst part, right? It got worse. It got worse. It got worse. It got worse. Like, actually, you might have to go watch this movie. Like, now that I'm talking about it again, maybe you should go watch it. Maybe I do have to recommend it to you, because I'm doing a piss poor job at explaining it. But as I'm remembering it, like, I am, in retrospect, I have more appreciation for it in retrospect than I did when I watched it. Yeah, this is a big spoiler, but at the end of the movie, he goes to jail. He gets arrested. He goes to jail for drugs, and I don't know, I don't even know what he went to jail for. But, oh, I don't even know if I said this, but, like, he and the girl from the beginning of the movie, like, ended up back together, and, like, she was also, like, suffering immensely and also fell into this spiral of drug addiction and opioid use. And we see the deterioration of not only Tom Holland's character, but also his girlfriend turned fiance turned wife. But he goes to jail, he gets out of jail. The very ending scene, after 2.5 hours of nothing but doom, gloom, no good, terrible, very bad stuff, the very ending, he gets released from prison, he walks outside, and he sees his girl waiting for him by his car. And I just remember being like, thank God that is how the movie ended. Like, thank God we got something. Thank God he got something. Like, if nothing else, we got that element of, like, withstanding love. And that's all you can really ask for in life. You know what I mean? So I hope you loved my really shitty synopsis of the 2021 movie Cherry. I think I have to stop talking about it now, though. You know what I need to talk about, though, is Benny Blanco and Charlie Puth, okay? And if you are not on the internet as much as I am, you're going to be like, why are we talking about these two guys? Who are they? You know? And I'm about to tell you. So, we all know Charlie Puth, right? Famously, Taylor Swift declared that he should be a bigger artist in the titular title track of the Tortured Poets Department. But Benny Blanco is who Selena Gomez is currently dating. They've been together for a while. Selena Gomez, Benny Blanco. I was wondering, I had to make sure. For some reason, I had this weird Mandela effect where I thought they were engaged, but that is not the case. Benny Blanco, if you're unfamiliar, is a songwriter, producer. I think he's done a lot. He wrote a bunch of songs from like the 2010s, kind of. Let me pull up right here. I remember the reason I know his name is because, not to mention One Republic again, because I know I did in the last episode, but he did a song with One Republic back in the Dizay that I recall. And so that's the only reason I know his name. And he did like remixes and stuff of songs, but he has written a bunch of songs for Justin Bieber particularly. Let me see. Benny Blanco songs written. There we go. Yeah, so he's done songs for Camila Cabello, Justin Bieber, Gracie Abrams. He did Teenage Dream by Katy Perry, Moves Like Jagger from Maroon 5. So he made some kind of iconic songs from that era. He did I Kissed a Girl. He did Payphone. So Benny Blanco is kind of out here. He did TikTok by Kesha, you guys. Benny Blanco made TikTok by Kesha. He wrote that fucking song. But he is known for being a longtime collaborator of Justin Bieber. Now, that is curious when we are considering what we know about Selena Gomez and Justin Bieber and Hailey Bieber. So this came out. I remember I heard about this sometime this week because just the other day, Hailey Bieber and Justin Bieber announced that they were having a baby. And for some reason, that spawned all of this Benny Blanco stuff. Like that, it started coming up on my algorithms. But like, because Selena and Justin have had such a weird relationship, and there has been such strange Selena Hailey quote unquote beef like on TikTok and stuff recently-ish. Like, it is curious now that she's dating Benny Blanco. You know what I mean? But that's not what I'm here to talk about. I'm here to talk about Benny Blanco's one-sided beef with Charlie Puth. Mr. Charlie Perfect Pitch Puth. Okay, here it goes. Charlie Puth, we all know, is cringe as fuck on TikTok. I actually don't know if we all know that, but Charlie Puth is like, at least during COVID, because that's when I kind of remember seeing him on TikTok a lot. I don't see him very much anymore. The algorithm must know that I don't really want to. But he would come up all the time, like doing all of these like thirst traps and like being horny on main, essentially, is what he was doing. Here's the thing about Charlie Puth is that he does make cringy TikToks, and I hate that I'm about to defend him, okay? I hate that I'm about to defend him, but Benny Blanco is the one in the wrong here, okay? So this is a one-sided beef existing solely within the confines of TikTok. So Charlie Puth, the past couple years, has been posting these TikToks, and Benny Blanco will get on and stitch them and essentially just, like, bully and make fun of Charlie Puth to the extent where, like, I think people were confused at first because they were like, well, they have to be friends. Like, these two guys have to be friends, or else why would Benny Blanco be ribbing Charlie Puth like that? Like, if they aren't friends and this isn't a joke, this is just like really mean and weird. And it turns out that they don't really know each other and that it is mean and weird, because there was an interview that Charlie Puth did, some kind of like video interview with some publication, and they asked him, they were like, dude, what's going on with like you and Benny Blanco? And he was like, dude, I have literally no idea. Like, I don't know what his problem is with me. I will post a video on my Instagram, Obscurapod Instagram, if I remember. So go follow that if you're curious. But here, let me actually play the video. I think maybe just audio alone.
And then a really soft guitar like.
Okay, so that actually wasn't a good example. a good audio example, because what he did, Benny Blanco stitched that video, made fun of the way Charlie Puth was talking, and then made these really annoying like faces that were clearly just like mean. I have to post this. Like, here's the thing. There are so many reasons to make fun of people. If you have to make fun of someone for the way that they look, you don't have a really good argument. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a hater to my core, and like, you just can't make fun of people for how they look. Okay, or the faces they make. Like, that is fucked up. If you really hate someone, you can find a reason to make fun of them that isn't looks based, okay?
I really do have to finish this song.
What if it's
I really do have to finish.
Shut the fuck up, Charlie. You don't have to finish this song. Nobody.
So Charlie Puth alleges in this video from January 28th, 2022. That he thinks everything's fine and that he thought him and Benny Blanco were cool until these videos started getting made. So I don't know, but I love a little he said, she said, non-consequential drama. And I just felt the need to bring this information to you guys as my loyal listeners. Like, if you didn't know that this random ass dude named Benny Blanco and Charlie Puth were beefing, now you do, okay? Also, Benny Blanco has been the topic of conversation lately relating to his really inappropriate TikTok use. Like, he is like such a creep on TikTok because he posts all of these videos of his kid, like his little young kid. Like, I don't know kids, but he seems to be like maybe 1 to 3 years old, somewhere in that range. And Benny posts these videos of him completely naked, the kid completely naked, talking about like really inappropriate stuff on his TikTok account, and people are like, this is weird, right? Like, how is he getting away with this? Like, these videos of him, of this naked little kid, have like millions upon millions of views and likes and saves, and it's really weird. But I actually can't speak to that too much because I actually don't think there's anything to say other than like, don't do that. You know what I mean? Like, don't put your naked toddler on TikTok. How about that? Anyway, back to Charlie Puth though, because it is when I was kind of gagged at first when I saw that lyric about Charlie Puth in the Taylor song, because, well, at first I thought it was fake because I saw the leak and I was like, there's no way that's real. And then it was, and I was aghast, gagged, gooped, aghast, all of the above. But it was funny to me personally because I kind of have this long, like going back a really long time. Like, when did Charlie Puth like first kind of make it on the scene? Charlie Puth, I'm just gonna Google Charlie Puth. I don't know anything about this guy. He is 32 years old, born in 1991 from New Jersey. Okay, pop off. New Jersey represent. Never been there. I don't actually know when I first became aware of Charlie Puth, but I would guess it was sometime a little bit before he did See You Again. When did he do that? When did that song come out? That song came out in 2015. This quote from fandomwire.com. Do you like how I always end up on the most trustworthy fact-checked websites on this podcast? Like, yes, fandomwire.com. I'm 100% going to trust what you say about Charlie Puth, okay? Because it has no bearing on anything. Song was written as a tribute, blah, 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 Fury 7. It was a huge hit and soon had the top spot on music charts everywhere. Yeah, dude, that song was everywhere for years, like literal years. I remember hearing it on the radio all the time. It ended up being a turning point for the singer Charlie Puth, who later credited Walker for his music career. I had never even met Paul, and he's the reason I have a music career right now. So he literally credits See You Again for the reason he has a career now. So yeah, that was probably around the time, like 2014, 2015 was probably the time that I became aware of Charlie Puth as a person. And shortly thereafter, I was made aware of the fact that like he is rather talented. Like, he does have that perfect pitch that everyone likes to talk about. You know what I mean? And the thing about him that always kind of confused me was that his image was kind of at odds with who I thought him to be. And I know that's kind of a rich thing to say because like, we don't know these people. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know Charlie Puth. I literally don't. But like, the music he was putting out was, no, this is what I meant to say. The music he was putting out was kind of at odds with his image, if that makes sense. Because I don't even know, like, and the problem is that I haven't really thought about Charlie Puth that much. And I don't know why I'm talking about him right now on this podcast, but because I don't have like a fleshed out thought about him really. But even like 10 years ago or whatever, like, I remember perceiving Charlie Puth and being like, this could be good, but like, something's wrong. You know what I mean? Like, something isn't quite there. And I think the thing is that like, he's a technically like a good singer, and I think he's like kind of cute. Like Charlie Puth is like not a bad looking guy. Like he has that like little eyebrow slit thing going on that like, I don't know, like it's a choice, you know, and I like it when men make choices. But his music just has never really hit with me, and I think it's because he's not making the music that I feel like he should be making based off of how he looks and how I perceive him based on his image. You know, like I have always kind of been like, I wish that like I was in charge of Charlie Puth. Like I wish that I was his manager, because like I feel like I could turn him into like a really cool artist that everyone likes. And so in that sense, I do kind of get what Taylor Swift was saying in that song of, we both declared Charlie Puth should be a bigger artist, is like, yeah, I don't think that, I actually think he's appropriately, like, I don't think Charlie Puth as it stands is underrated. I think he's very appropriately rated for what he is, you know? But I do think that someone with good, like, PR skills, manager skills, could turn Charlie Puth into like an it guy. Like I actually do think that Charlie Puth could have been a Harry Styles if he had the right team. Does that, I don't know, like, is what label is Charlie Puth signed to? Okay, so I think he signed with Atlantic right now. Yeah, he's on Atlantic. I don't know. Like, I just wish something about him was different. You know what I mean? And that is no shade to Charlie Puth, okay? Charlie, if you're listening right now, keep doing you, man. Keep doing you. Keep rocking that eyebrow slit. Like, hell yeah, brother. You know, keep getting on TikTok and making horny videos. Like, you absolutely kill it. However, I just kind of think that all said and done, we could do something different with you. We could do something different. We could have you doing the kind of music that I would like Charlie Puth to be making is like piano ballads. Like, do you guys know Tor Miller? You guys know, what the fuck do you guys know about Tor Miller? Okay. I don't know. I remember, how did I even get introduced to him? I have listened to Tor Miller since I was like a freshman or sophomore in high school. I followed him on Instagram for like years and years and years. But I'm like a lurker, you know what I mean? Like, I don't interact with anything. I like his pictures and stuff, but he's probably like, damn, this girl's been with me on Instagram for the long haul. Like, because he's a relatively small artist. I think he has, as it stands, Tor Miller currently has 22.2 thousand Instagram followers. So he is like not a big artist by any means. So maybe I wouldn't be surprised if you guys do not know him at all. I would recommend that you listen to Baby Blue, absolutely iconic song. Rag and Bone is good. Crust Punk Queen is good. He has a lot of songs that I really, really like, and he has an incredible voice, and he just absolutely shreds on the piano. And I think that's what I kind of want from Charlie Puth. Like, I think that would work. That would be less at odds with me in my head of, in terms of who Charlie Puth is as a person. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I'm going to stop. Why? I don't know how long I've been talking about Charlie Puth at this point, but I got to stop. Can I say something? I've been recording this podcast for 55 minutes and I couldn't tell you what I've been discussing. Like, I know that we started with challengers and then we talked a little bit about Cherry and then we started talking about Charlie Puth, but like, how did those three topics take up almost an hour of time? I'm really confused and I'm really nervous to listen to this back because I don't know what it's going to be. The last thing that I want to make sure I squeeze in today's episode is all of the different names that people have for egg in a basket. Or egg in a hole, or Rocky Mountain toast, or whatever you call that thing that is a piece of toast with a hole in the middle that you fry an egg inside, okay? You know it, you've seen it. Me and Montana were at lunch yesterday, and that was on the menu, and it was on the menu as toad in a hole. Egg in a hole. It was, yeah, toad in a hole was what they had called it on the menu. I think that's what they had called it. It was toad something, and it was cracking me up. And then we were both like, grew up calling it different things too. And Montana found this website that had like every known name for this dish listed out. I'm gonna pull it up right now. And we got to go through it together because I didn't know that there was such an extensive list of names for egg in a hole toast, you know? This is from the website myrecipes.com. There are at least 66 different names for egg in a hole. They run the gamut from expected to weird and maybe sort of offensive. That was the other thing. Me and Montana were looking, we were like, some of these feel a bit racially motivated. And so I'm going to skip over those. But here is a list of almost every single thing you could call eggs fried in bread. Okay. We're starting off easy. Egg in a hole. Egg with a hat. Egg in a trash can. Now, who's calling their breakfast egg in a trash can? Who would want to eat that? Egg in a basket. That's what I'm familiar with. Egg in a nest. Kind of cute. Okay. I have to move down closer down, further down the list because egg in jail is number 15. Free my homie. He ain't do nothing. There's birdie in a basket. Toad in a hole. Yes, yes, yes. Toad in the road. Frog in the pond. Bullseye. Ox eye eggs, camel's eyes, elephant tracks, Betty Jane, Mary Jane, Marty Wilson. Those are kind of wild cards. Why did anyone even call them that? Adam and Eve on a raft is one of them. Adam and Eve on a raft. You guys, riddle me that. Adam and Eve on a raft. It's a thing. It's a diner term that refers to two eggs, either poached or scrambled, on toast. Well, that's different than egg in a basket. Egg on toast is different than egg in a basket because the egg is not on the toast. It's in the toast in that case, right? It's a diner phrase. The diner phrase, Adam and Eve on a raft. It's like a retro term. Okay, that makes sense. Not really, but I'll tell myself that. The Popeye, one-eyed Susie, one-eyed Jack, one-eyed Pete, one-eyed pirate, lazy-eyed pirate, one-eyed Texan, a man in a raft. Okay, crazy, right? We also have Rocky Mountain toast, Polish eggs, lighthouse eggs, Birmingham eggs, guest house eggs, gas house eggs, gaslight eggs. That's the eggs you give to people and then tell them that they're crazy. We have circus toast, sunshine eggs, hocus pocus eggs, peekaboo eggs, hole in one. My personal favorite, toast tits. That's right, toast titties. That's what we should all be referring to them on from now on. Spit in the eye. Never in my life would I be caught dead ordering anything called spit in the eye. It just doesn't sound yummy or delightful. We have diamond toast. Baby in a buggy. That's kind of cute, you know? Baby in a buggy. Oh, the egg is the baby and the buggy is the toast. Like, okay, I can get on board with that. Donut egg. Toast with a tummy or belly button egg, which I'm not loving. And then the last one they have on this list is moon over Miami eggs. And Montana pulled that one up yesterday. I think there's some kind of like movie reference involved there. Moon over Miami eggs. Or, well, yeah, it would be Moon Over Miami, a classic fried egg breakfast, also known as Toad in a Hole. Okay, well, did it come from the movie? Like, Moon, I've never even heard of the movie Moon Over Miami. I have to Google that. 1941. Well, that's why. It's because I wasn't even alive. My parents weren't even alive. Is this bad? I have no interest in any movies that were made before 1979. Like, I don't care. I don't want to watch it. There's something about them. It's kind of the same mental block to me as animated movies. I was just talking to my friend Ryan about this, like, literally a couple hours ago, because they asked me if I was an Avatar kid, and I was like, no, I've never watched Avatar. Like, I actually kind of have zero interest in anything that is animated. Like, for some reason, it's really hard for me to get into animated stories told in an animated fashion. I don't know why it like doesn't grip me. And the same thing happens with like old movies. Like I can't get myself to be riveted by them. Like I know that might be like not the right take or a cold take or whatever, but yeah, like old movies, like early Hollywood movies, they're just not for me. I just can't really get into it. So Moon Over Miami, with all due respect, I will probably never be watching, but I am curious about if the eggs came, which came first, the movie or the egg? You know what I mean? I'm curious to know what you guys called egg in a hole though. If your family had like a different name, or if it was one of the names on the list, like please let me know. Because I'd like to crowdsource some information about what we are referring to that dish as, you know? I think it's interesting. And I personally am really gunning for all of us to start calling it toast tits. What's interesting is that I rarely think about egg in a basket. You know what I mean? Like I never make it. I would never order it in a restaurant. It's just not really my go-to breakfast. But in the case that I do maybe start referring to that more often, I personally am going to be using the term toast tits. So get into it. Get into it, girls. Okay. I think that I need to sign off today a little earlier than usual. I know this is going to be maybe a little bit of a shorter episode, but I'm starving. I have not been taking care of myself today as much as I should have. I have walked probably like 4 miles because I have been getting around, but the only thing I've consumed is 2 iced coffees and a bagel with cream cheese. And I'm thinking that my body is kind of like at the point in the day, because it's like 5:30 at this point. And I had that bagel at like 10:30-ish. So like I'm starving. I need to get up. I need to get moving. I have prints that I need to make before my market tomorrow. It's Mother's Day. So yeah, and then I need to edit this podcast. So I, realistically speaking, need to hop off this mic and hop into whatever my next project is. But thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. I think this episode is like a little chaotic and maybe not the best, not my best work, but all I gotta say is that I had fun recording it. I hope that you'll stick around, maybe come back next week if you so choose. Obviously, I would love it if you subscribe to the show, left me a rating or review, and come hang out with me on Instagram if you want to. ObscuraPod is the podcast's Instagram. And we have fun over there. I post visuals for the episodes and stories throughout the week. So yeah, that's it. I had a bigger agenda for this podcast, but I kind of don't. At this point, I'm just moving that over to next week. Like, I've had a good time. There's more to talk about. And aptly, I will tell you all about it when I see you again. Okay, bye.